You're listening to TFM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, everyone. I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading in case I got bored.
Well, hello and welcome to Literary Treks, TFM's dedicated books and comics show for everything Star Trek, of course. I am just but one of your hosts, Casey Pettit, and with me, as he pretty much always is, unless I'm not here, then I'm the one who's not with us, is Jonathan Cohn. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you, Casey, for being back. We missed you on the last one. I think that was the last one that you were absent on.
It was. Yeah, I missed the interview, but I listened and it was very good. I really enjoyed the book, so really enjoyed listening to your guys' interview.
Yeah, Matthew and I really enjoyed that book too. So yeah, that was a good one to interview on.
Yes, and for those of us and for those listeners who don't know what we're talking about, we're talking about Pliable Truths by Dayton Ward, which was the previous episode of Literary Trek. So go check that out. If you haven't read that book, definitely give it a read.
Yep.
Before we really get started today, I'll let you know how to get in touch with us on X and Instagram. You can find the network at Trek FM. Make sure to join our Goodreads group. You just look for Literary Treks there. You can find the network on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And then you can also join our Facebook group called the Babel Conference. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the search field and that should come right up. And then lastly, or almost lastly, you can find us on patreon.com/trekfm. It's patreon.com/trekfm. And consider contributing to the network. That would really help all these shows coming to you each and every month. And, you know, you can even join us at an associate producer level for myself and Greg Rozier. We'd appreciate the support. So go on over to Patreon and help support the network. And lastly, I mean, obviously, if you're listening to this, you're going to find us wherever you're listening to your podcasts. But if you, especially on Apple Podcasts, give us a star rating and written review. It's been a while since we've gotten one. And that would really help us improve the show for you and then also help others find the show. And Jonathan, this week we actually do have some news. I can't remember if you mentioned it last time, but why don't you tell us what we've got coming up?
So we just found out about the new James Swallow book, Strange New Worlds Toward the Night. And that's releasing April 29th, 2025 in a hardcover. This is, I'm going to read the synopsis. This is a thrilling new novel based on the Paramount Plus TV series Star Trek Strange New Worlds. While patrolling the borders of the Klingon Empire, Captain Christopher Pike and the crew of the USS Enterprise record a series of subspace echoes from a planet orbiting a volatile flare star. And when Lieutenant Spock and Commander Una Chin Riley lead a landing party to learn more, they discover the ruins of a dead civilization and evidence of starship-grade metals, quite possibly a crash site. As they continue to investigate the strange signals, Spock and Una find shocking signs of dangerous alien life and remnants of what can only be Federation hardware. The trail soon leads Pike and Enterprise's helmswoman, Lieutenant Erica Ortegas, deep into the mystery of a lost Starfleet vessel, missing in action for over 90 years, and to a terrible dilemma that will challenge the crew to question their past and their future.
Very nice.
Thank you.
I am looking forward to that. That sounds awesome. We always love when we got a book from James Swallow, and a ship missing for over 90 years. So that's like Enterprise era.
Enterprise era,
since it took place. Yeah, since that took place like 100 years before Kirk's time, and Strange New Worlds is 10 years before that. I just wonder, is this the, was it the Columbia?
Which, yeah, you know, yeah, from the Destiny series.
Yeah, I wonder if we're going to kind of revisit that, or...
I'll really hope that that's not where they're going, because it is, if they are doing the Columbia, it will be impossible for the discussion around this book to not be, oh, well, if you compare it to what Mac did in a trilogy, like the most epic trilogy of Star Trek ever, the Destiny trilogy, it's not going to work, because this single novel, it's Strange New Worlds. I really hope, and I'm guessing it's not, because if it is, boy, that's, from a marketing perspective, I think that's going to be rough. But if it's not, oh boy, I'm looking forward to this. I think I have yet to read a James Swallow book that I've not enjoyed. Like every book of his that I've read, I've really liked.
Yeah, same. And he's, you know, hopefully we'll be able to get him on the show again. He's always such a pleasure to have, just a, you know, wealth of knowledge and, you know, great stories about, you know, his writing adventures. So, I mean, we've got almost a year to look forward to this one, about 11 months as we're recording this, but can't wait for it.
I'm a little bit sad, because if this information leaked now that we know, like, the July book, we know the November book, and now we know the April book, it probably means we're not getting a book in Q1 2025, which probably means that getting four books like we did this year is probably unlikely, which is sad, because I was hoping that they were ramping up again, that they were going to keep increasing, or at least keep the same number. And maybe they will do more. Maybe they'll do like multiple in Q2 or Q3. Maybe that's the case. But I'm hoping that they keep these numbers up, because two or three a year was so sad.
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting, because, you know, so the, you know, book we've got coming in July is an original series novel. In November, we've got a Strange New Worlds novel by Una McCormick called Asylum. And you and I were talking before we started recording about how funny it is that we don't have a cover for Asylum yet. Yes. But we do for Toward the Night, which is kind of a nice shot of the Enterprise crew, and it looks like kind of a city with some planets or moons above it. But we've got two, like in November and then April, we've got two Strange New Worlds books. Nothing else from any other series announced. And we've just recently had a Next Generation novel. We've got an original series novel coming up next month. Anything, you know, I just wonder, is there any more Discovery? I know the show's ended, so is there more that they're going to do there? Are we going to start setting anything up for Starfleet Academy? Anything like that?
Well, I was really hoping that we were going to get a Voyager book in 2025, because that's the 30th anniversary of Voyager.
Oh, yeah.
But they didn't do anything for the 30th anniversary of Deep Space Nine in 2023. So it's not like there's precedent for that. And then in 2026 is the 60th anniversary of the original series. So like they did for the 50th anniversary, they did two trilogies. So for the 60th, I'd love to do, like, you know how they, for the fall, they had a 5-book series. I'd love for the 60th anniversary to do a 6-book series. That's a little too high in the sky. I'd accept a trilogy if that's all they have. I'd accept that. But I do wonder what the weirdness of scheduling two Strange New Worlds back to back. That's just an odd choice to me.
I just wonder if it has to do with the show, and, you know, it's had some delays because of the writer's strike, and, you know, they've just recently wrapped on filming the third season, and I think they've already been picked up for the fourth season, and I don't know if that's been scheduled yet, but do we have a release date for season 3 yet of Strange New Worlds?
They just finished shooting it just a couple months ago, so they usually, most shows that are big budget shows, you put about 10 months to 12 months between when you finish shooting and releasing, so we're probably looking at summer of next year for release. Yeah. My wonder is, did John's Strange New Worlds book just sell so well that they're like, oh, the Strange New, they feel confident that the Strange New Worlds line is going to be the strong moneymaker, and so that's why they're putting their chips in there? Because, I mean, I don't have access to the book sale numbers, but that makes me curious.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, if anybody from Simon & Schuster is listening, let us know.
Please.
I mean, we're happy for these books. Don't get us wrong.
Yes.
We just want to know what else might be coming, but So, well, anyway, yeah, so that's the news. You know, we got a few books coming up. Not long to wait for the next one in July of 2024, but then we've got some time on our hands. So in the meantime, Jonathan, why don't we take a dip in the Well of Souls?
That was smooth. That was smooth.
All right, so the book that we have chosen for this month is one of the ones from the Lost Era line from back in the 90s, I think, or mm-hmm. Do you remember when these came out?
No, it was the 2000s. It was early 2000s.
2000s. Yeah. A long time ago, either way. And, you know, this we've gone through a few of them so far, and the one we chose for this one is called Well of Souls. And on the cover, we've got Captain Rachel Garrett, who we remember from the Next Generation episode, Yesterday's Enterprise, as the captain of the Enterprise C. And I guess, you know, before we get started here, Jonathan, I'm wondering kind of what were your expectations going into this, like based on, you know, any of the other Lost Era novels that you read? I think the last one we talked about was The Art of the Impossible. We've also done The Buried Age. I'm not sure if that's one that you've read or not, but, you know, what were you hoping for in this book?
So I only read the one other Lost Era book, Art of the Impossible. So I don't have, you know, a barometer for the previous ones. I watched Yesterday's Enterprise like once. So I don't remember the character that well. So I was hoping that we'd get a good introduction to Garrett, the rest of the crew of the sea, and maybe see what like the political situation is during this period that's in between the original series era, the movie era, and the TNG era, because we haven't, you know, that part, the Lost Era is supposed to be filling in that gap. And maybe I'm wrong. Are there any other Rachel Garrett books in the publishing line? Like none that feature her as the, you know, the prominent lead? I don't think so. None come to mind.
I'm sure so there's comics, but yeah, as far as novels, right. No, not that I'm aware of.
So this book has some heavy lifting to do as the, you know, singular book for her. So I was hoping that we would get a lot about her. She's kind of in it.
She's kind of in it. That's kind of a good way to put it. You know, I was thinking the same thing, especially, and I actually just watched yesterday's Enterprise today.
Oh, I should have.
I finished
that.
Reading the book yesterday. Yeah, I was eating lunch and I thought, you know, I should put that episode on because, spoiler alert for listeners, I did not like her in this book. She's kind of mean. She's not a likable character, I didn't think.
She's not.
Which I thought was, a really interesting choice for a captain of the Enterprise, first mm-hmm. of all, you know, somebody who is featured on the cover. And, we didn't get much screen time. And I just don't know, you know, we didn't get her much in the episode because mm-hmm. she dies, you know, 2/3 of the way through it, maybe. And she's a little gruff in the episode, but she also just came through a time rift and, you know, is, you know, in the middle of a battle and trying to decide if she's going to go and sacrifice her crew and all this kind of stuff. But, I never got the impression from that episode that she was just this kind of mean captain that would, you know, dress down an officer in front of everybody else or something like mm-hmm. that. But, you know, one of the things that we got right at the beginning of the book before we didn't see her for, you know, another couple hundred pages was that she at this point, I think if I did my math right, this is about 4 years before the Enterprise C was lost. Because in the episode Yesterday's Enterprise, the Enterprise C was lost 22 years before that episode, which was in season 3 of Next Generation. And then the book takes place, I think, like 28 years before the events of Encounter at Farpoint or something to that effect. So this is, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, somewhere in that range before the ship is lost. So a little ways in advance of that. But at this point, she's kind of shown as really kind of an imperfect captain. She's kind of broken. She's recently lost her XO. She's also who she also kind of had a romantic fling with, it sounds like. She Yeah, she's, you know, we find out she's divorced, and her, you know, she's got a son who she keeps missing things like his birthday, and it just sounds like it's kind of, you know, long string of letdowns for her son, and just not a great standing relationship with her ex-husband. But so, I mean, that it does put into context a little bit, like, her character and maybe in why she's kind of the way she is. But even there, it was a pretty hard introduction to her, I feel like, in this book.
Yeah. And, you know, this part of the problem is, and something that I think Star Trek has kind of struggled with in a lot of its media between, you know, TV shows and movies and books, is that they've done, I think, a pretty poor job of describing, of showing families in the future. You know, Star Trek is supposed to be kind of this utopia. Why are there so many divorced families? Why are there so many broken? Why is it so hard for, why does it seem to resemble our modern day family issues? And that is absolutely, I think the problem here is that, you know, she's already unlikable. And when you throw in the fact that she couldn't keep her marriage together, which part of it probably also goes on her husband, but I think a lot of it is on her. And then also you throw in a lot of the fact that she's missing her son's birthday and stuff. It's just, you want your main character to be likable or at least sympathetic, And yeah. I don't think the book did a good job of making us sympathize, because we know the difficulties of being a captain. You know, everyone from Janeway to Picard to Kirk, like all those characters demonstrate the heaviness and the weightiness of being a captain and how difficult it is to have a family. But I just don't know what, like, maybe it is just the unlikableness of her character that made it so that it just didn't work here. The way, like, I don't think that Ilsa J. Bick did a good job of conveying the difficulties of being captain properly here.
Yeah, and I think I almost feel like she tried to do too much with the character, because
yes,
she could have had her as, you know, having been divorced, but have at least some kind of somewhat decent relationship with her ex, maybe not letting her son down, showing that, like, in the future we've learned how to co-parent or how to you know, deal with that. And, you know, and yeah, like, they did talk, or, you know, she talks in the book about how she basically chose her career over her family, which, yeah, like, I'm sure the husband wasn't faultless in this either, but, you know, she made a choice, and at that point Starfleet wasn't allowing families on ships, and she didn't want her son kind of traipsing around the galaxy in these dangerous situations either. But, you know, I just kind of wonder, like, did the author want to kind of separate her from Janeway? Because this is kind of the only other really prominent female captain that we've ever had in Star Trek up to this point. I mean, we've seen others on screen and everything, but this is a captain of the Enterprise here that we're talking about.
Right.
And so I'm wondering if she wanted to kind of separate her in some way from Janeway so that she wasn't just writing a Janeway type character. But, and it's fine with her dealing with some loss, you know, like, of crew people, because, you know, we've seen that before. In fact, Pike in the episode The Cage, like the original episode, he was dealing with having lost some crew. You know, and even in this case, you know, if Garrett was having a relationship with her XO, which is questionable to start with, you know, there were just too many things kind of piled on here that I don't know. I just, even by the end of the book, like, I didn't feel like there was anything redeeming really about her adventure here.
So, while, you know, the character of Garrett, I think, did not work as strongly, there are a few other characters in the book that I think did work quite well. 'Cause I don't want to just, you know, we don't want to just be negative here. So I'll yes. mention that two of the characters that I thought worked really well for me were Bat Levy or Bat Levi, I don't know how to pronounce it, and then also the psychiatrist, I suppose, was it Tyvin?
Tyvin.
So for me, the two of them worked because I loved how Tyvin first is just, it enjoys prodding Bat Levy,
yeah.
And he's constantly just, you know, he's listening and he's asking questions, and she knows he's leading her in directions she doesn't want to go, and she still ends up revealing all this stuff to him about her past. And they just had their banter and their dynamic throughout the book, I thought, was really charming. And I was always kind of like, I smiled a little bit whenever the two of them would have a scene together. And so what did you think about those characters?
Yeah, those were two that I also really liked, because Bat Levi especially was very well developed as a character, mm-hmm. even though she wasn't really used much in the book. Like, she was kind of like the what would she have been, like the third in line for the XO position, basically.
Right. Yeah.
But you know, she's been severely disfigured. She's dealing with that. She feels guilt because she's lost some crew people too under her, mm-hmm. or not necessarily under her, but like, you know, kind of on a mission with her. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of losing trust in herself. And I think it's something that is very, something that a lot of people can really relate to. I think maybe not so much this cybernetic implants and everything that she had, but I did love the scenes between the two of them, though, because sometimes you get from her perspective, sometimes you get from the doctor's perspective. And so you can see how each of them are approaching these sessions that they're having. And you get inside Bat Levi's mind, and she knows, and a lot of us, when we're in tough situations, we know logically and intellectually how we should feel, like that we're not at fault for certain things, but like, you can't help feeling what you feel. And Tyvan's able to bring that out of her, and, mm-hmm. and even his own kind of his thinking about the things that he wants to say, but he's not gonna, because he wants her to kind of come to conclusions on her own. I just thought was such a great interaction between those characters. And really, you know, I want more from them, you know, really. I want another mm-hmm. book on the Enterprise C and you know, hear more about them.
And Tyvan was really interesting, because I believe, if I'm remembering, he was the Tellorian, right?
He was an Elorian, yeah, like Guinan is.
Elorian. Yeah, so he was, which makes him perfect for his job as a psychiatrist. But, you know, I always get excited when the Elorians are on screen, because it makes me think of Generations in that sequence. Mm-hmm. But in his part of the book specifically, It's several times he references the Borg. He talks about what the Borg did to his family, and he's talking about the threat of the Borg. And I'm just thinking, am I crazy, or was like is the episode Q Who the episode where they're totally caught off guard when they meet the Borg? And if I understand if an Elorian was rescued in Generations and then went off and did their own thing and did not warn, you know, Starfleet, I get that. Tyvan is like on a starship. How has he not, or no one else, gone to Starfleet and been like, hey, I know about this gigantic threat out there. Let me tell you about it so that you are prepared. Like, he has all this information, and he, as far as I know, unless I totally missed it in the book, he doesn't reveal it. And that just...
Mm-mm.
And it's same with Whoopi Goldberg's character, and she's also on the Enterprise, the Enterprise D, and they literally go to her in the middle of the episode, be like, have you ever experienced these guys? And she's like, oh yeah, it's the Borg. And it's like, well, thanks for telling us.
Sorry, I know.
Just a little tangent.
An entire displaced people that have never... I always wonder about that too. Like, did they report back to Starfleet about this, and then it was something that was classified? I'm sure if they did it on screen today, that's what they would do, is they would classify it.
Yes, and I would accept that, because there's stuff in here about classified information, and that kind of ties into the book of Garrett being so angry that they're like, we know this, we can't tell you it. She's like, well, I'm not going to accept it if you don't tell. All right, we'll tell you the classified information. It's like,
yeah.
Why'd you make it classified if you knew she was going to force you to make it unclassified?
Well, and if you remember from Voyager, too, and I think it was in the episode The Raven, when we're learning about Seven of Nine's past and her parents that were on basically a quest to find the Borg. They had their own ship and were trying to get it to the Delta Quadrant to find the Borg. So people knew about it, mm-hmm. but for some reason it wasn't any kind of common knowledge, you know, and if they thought that the Borg were still in the Delta Quadrant, then I guess they thought, well, that's so far away, like, even if they're on their way here, it's going to be, you know, another 50 to 100 years before they get here, however long.
And that's one of the that's also kind of interesting because, and if you guys aren't interested in this topic, I'm sorry, but I really am curious on this tangent because, you know, in Star Trek, one of the common themes is like preserving your environment, and, you know, global warming has been used in many episodes and books to and talking about existential threats and whatnot. And the theme that's usually used is no. This may be 50 years down the line. You prepare today. That is like one of the common tenets of people who focus on global warming. And the Borg seem to me to be the perfect analog for global warming in that it is a huge threat. It's coming. You know it's coming, but it's coming for a long time. But the more you prep now, the better you can face it later. Like, it just seems like that's the perfect way for Star Trek to deal with this subject, and that was not the way they decided to do that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I don't know. I did like the call out, you know, and having an Elorian as the psychiatrist and having a character that's got these implants and trying to deal with that, because he's got his own revulsion to that he's trying to deal with internally.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really well done, and, you know, trying to work within the confines of what they've done on screen, at least.
Him reassuring the ensign when the ensign that comes in to tell him, hey, you know, Garrett's waiting on you. And he's literally like, the poor ensign is just waiting for Garrett to yell at him for shooting the messenger, and Tyvin just being like, don't worry, I got this. You just don't even be in the room. I'll just go deal with it myself. Yeah. And that poor Edson, I could just see him sweating, being like, crap, he's not going to be there on time. I'm going to get in so much trouble.
Well, then, you know, he's the one that gets dressed down by Garrett in front of everybody. And he knows it's coming. He knows it's going to happen in the room and everything, which, you know, I don't know. It's and he's kind of one of those characters, too, and kind of like Dr. Stern, who I'm calling the female McCoy, or kind of a precursor to Dr. Pulaski. Dr. Stern in this book seems like she was intended to be kind of what McCoy was for Kirk, and I'm not sure if it worked for me or not, but, you know, she's kind of a little kind of bug in Garrett's ear, telling her to calm down when she needs to calm down, or sometimes she's kind of stirring the pot, it seems like. But, you know, she's somebody that is kind of gruff and grumpy and everything, and she's actually friends with McCoy, so that kind of helps. But, you know, having these, you know, kind of almost what should be side characters in this book, you know, one of the things I will say about this book is the characters are, other than Garrett, are really pretty well fleshed out. And I'd actually say that Castillo was probably one that he just wasn't in the book enough, really. But, like, he still had a little bit of depth that he got, you know, and he was an ensign at this point. He was a lieutenant in yesterday's Enterprise. But, you know, I really enjoyed Dr. Stern. You know, she was just, it almost got to a point where it was like, okay, like, back off. But usually by that point, you know, Garrett's telling her, okay, back off, just cool it and let's move on or whatever. So, the doctor, you know, was another one that I really liked.
Having two kind of abrasive, gruff characters on the senior staff is, especially when one of them is so unlikable, like Garrett in the book, that's a really odd choice. Mm-hmm. On the writer's perspective, because usually, you know, you have like one, like in the original series, it's McCoy, you know, in Next Generation, I don't even know who it would be if there is one in Next Generation.
I'd almost say like Riker, because he would get like, you know, a little gruff sometimes, but
a little time at times. And then in Voyager, maybe Chakotay at times, but even then he never, or the doctor. Yeah. That I would say, yeah, the doctor is the abrasive one. You're right. So like all of them usually have one, but this one had two, and it felt too unbalanced for the story. But I did like Dr. Stern's character, at least a little bit more than Garrett's. Going into the structure of the book, to me, it felt like this was two story ideas that were smushed together. Like the mandate was, we are only going to do one Garrett book. And whether it was the author or whether it was the publisher, had wanted to get both the TNG political storyline and the TOS exploratory storyline in this. And so the two of, and so rather than have two different stories, like say, another massive novel like this, like, Full Circle, you know, for Voyager, Full Circle, the first half of it basically reads like one novel and the second half reads like one novel. And I think it, and because of the Destiny stuff happening, I think it really works. But here you don't have the Destiny trilogy or anything like that happening. And so it feels like it started out as that political storyline. And I loved the political storyline. I thought it was like, okay, I'm all on board. You got the they're framing him for something. Is he telling the truth? Is he not telling the truth? All of that I was all on board with. And then it just like turns about midway through the book into the kind of new species, new exploration, connecting to the Cardassians, which they don't know about. I was like, wait, but I you got me hooked on this other part. Why are you leaving this other part? At least that's how I felt.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree with you more. I, you know, Halleck was a character that I really enjoyed reading about. He's the one who's kind of being investigated. Mm-hmm. He's got kind of a little bit of a shadowy past. You know, Starfleet intelligence is showing up, and we're not like really sure for a long time. Like, I mean, I was getting the impression at some points that he actually worked for Starfleet intelligence, but like couldn't really even tell the Starfleet intelligence people that because he wasn't sure who knew what. And I felt like it was just such an interesting character, you know, and his kind of relationship with Batra, who, you know, ends up getting killed in this, and he's trying to keep stuff from her. It was just such a cool mystery story that, you know, it's a character we didn't know before, but here's another one where I feel like her characterization of the character, wow. This is another one where I feel like the author did such a good job with this characterization of Halleck that he was so interesting to read. And yeah, I wanted a trial. I wanted an inquiry or whatever you want to call it.
And what we got was so cool.
Yeah. And even by the end of the book, when we're still getting, when we finally get, because we get multiple stories of what happened on, like, it was like Rin 3, I think was the planet. And, you know, by the end, like, I'm still not even sure what the truth is. And that was cool. I kind of liked it. We had like three different versions of the story, and you know, we had like kind of what was known versus what Starfleet intelligence came up with versus what Halleck actually kind of quote unquote admits to Garrett by the end. And if the whole book had been about, you know, whatever this mission was and how everything happened, kind of a whodunit or, you know, whatever it is, would have been cool, but it ended up, yeah, kind of getting swept to the side once we got to the Cardassian stuff, and it kept getting brought up here and there, but by the time the Cardassian stuff was going on, Halleck was kind of just part of the team again to some extent, and it was like, oh, okay, I guess we're done with that, and we're going to make up some other story with the Cardassians to fill in.
Right, and I would have, if I was writing this, I would have, at the scene where they basically, I forgot who it was, but they call back Halleck and say, all right, you're going to use the shuttle and do that. I would have loved to have seen Garrett, because, you know, we've leaned into her abrasiveness and her character like this. Would have loved to have seen her say, nope, I am not letting this prisoner out of my sights. I do not trust you guys, which they'd already established she doesn't trust them, and have her literally defy orders and take the Enterprise back to Earth and see her go to the trial and go to the inquest and have to deal with the fallout of her refusing to go forward with stuff. And I would have loved to focus on that, as you were saying, like seeing a full trial. We got like hints of what the trial would look like with the little sequence that we got towards the beginning. And I thought we were going there because the author so specifically focused on Garrett not trusting Starfleet intelligence. She was so emphatic on that. And then as soon as those orders come in, she doesn't like them, but she says, all right, you go, we'll go this way. It's like, that's it. That's all you're going to put up with.
Yeah. Well, cause then that, you know, yeah. Cause it was hard. Cause then at that point, and this is where the novel gets to the point where the author's trying to do too much in one book, because they go to this nebula, they're trying to chart some protostars, I think is what it was. And they end up rescuing this ship of people and these colonists and everything that have nothing to do with anything. It, you know, it's just a way to get them out for a while and then come back and call Starfleet Command. And they're like, where have you been? You know, what do you shouldn't have been there. We didn't order you to do that, you know, and kind of opens up the mystery a little bit more. But I feel like there's ways that we could have really reduced the page count of this, you know, and those scenes are well written. You know, they're, you know, when you're in these parts, you know, like it's engaging and everything, but you just kind of keep losing the overall story. And, you know, by the time, and they're sprinkling this like archaeology quest, you know, throughout there too, with her ex-husband and her sons on the ship, and find out there maybe is something to do with the Orion Syndicate, or they come up with this one called the Katala, which is kind of another crime syndicate. And, you know, trying to find this portal that the ancient Cardassians, the Habesians, could use to get to this planet and all this stuff that I'm just like, I don't care about any of that stuff. Like, I don't. And especially in this era, if they're going to use a well-known villain or, you know, adversary, I guess I should say, be the Klingons and or the Romulans, which was, and maybe they were like, we've had too many of those stories, but like, that's, you know, the Enterprise C in yesterday's Enterprise was what eventually prevented the Federation from going to war with the Klingons. And so seeing some tensions there, seeing like maybe some tensions between Garrett and the Enterprise C and a Klingon ship, so that when we find out that they get destroyed later trying to defend a Klingon colony, we know how much of a hurdle that would be. It'd be like Kirk, you know, in Star Trek VI trying to defend, you know, the Klingons, or, you know, trying to make peace, I guess. Yeah, I just, every time we kept coming back to Halleck, even during all these things with the Cardassian stuff, Halleck was the one I was watching. You know, I wanted to know more about his story and everything. And, you know, by the end of the book, I feel like the author did a pretty good job tying everything that we got together. Not necessarily so much Halleck, but like, you know, getting him at least involved in this and having all these kind of different threads weaving together. It just took a really long time to get there.
Yeah. And like you were talking about earlier about individual scenes working for you, like Cal Darren and Jace, their scenes really fascinated with me, their dynamic, the way that, you know, Jace was dealing with hiding secrets from his father, who has that kind of, the Beta Z, stuff. And also, but his father, you know, respecting his son, that he's not going to just, you know, invade his mind and stuff. And then he's talking with the friend, I think it was Paul or P-A-H-L, Paul, and they're dealing with the archaeology. Like, I liked the way that she wrote the dynamics of them, and even was okay with some of the individual scenes, but because it felt so weirdly tied together, that it, the plot was not as clear in the book. Because of that, I think that's why the book ultimately failed. Its two big problems are, one, mishandling Garrett, who is the quote main character, and then two, losing the plot. And if you, like, your other stuff can be strong, but if you don't have those two things, your main character being solid and your plot being solid, it makes it really hard for audiences to get behind it.
Yeah. And I mean, for marketing these books as the Lost Era, you know, you mentioned it earlier about, you know, we're kind of bridging this gap between the end of, like, let's call it the end of the original series in Star Trek Generations to the beginning of the Next Generation. And if we're going to focus on specific characters that we know, or, you know, ships, you know, there was an Enterprise B story, you know, there was a Stargazer story, there's some with, you know, Sulu and Chekhov, and, you know, like, I think there was one with Sisko and Uhura, you know, so, and there was, you know, there's a lot of cool things that we can do here. And so then you put Garrett on the front cover, which she's kind of the only one, unless you put Castillo on the cover, but he's got such a little part of this book. I wanted an Enterprise C story. Like, I wanted to see the Enterprise C in action. I wanted to see Garrett. I wanted to see what this captain of the Enterprise could do. That just occurred to me. There is, I think, there's at least one Garrett story. There was a book years and years ago called Enterprise Logs that was actually just a collection of short stories or novellas that focused on each Enterprise back from like the Sloop of War Enterprise, tall ship.
Yeah.
And then there's like a, you know, the aircraft carrier to the shuttle and like all these different things. Like Diane Carey was like one of the editors of it, but she wrote like the nautical stuff since she's kind of a nautical person. But then I believe that there was a Kirk story and I think there was even a Captain Spock story, Captain of the Enterprise Spock. And then a Harriman, a Garrett, and a Picard story. I forgot about that book. It's been a long time, and I don't remember anything about that story. So if the listeners, if you've read that recently, let us know what that story was about. But I wanted a story about the captain of the Enterprise. I want to know what the Enterprise C was doing in its heyday as the flagship. They even mentioned this book. It's a flagship.
Right. Yeah.
But it's barely there. The ship is barely in the story, which was just kind of a bummer, you know, and part of that was my own expectations, I guess, going into this, reading the cover blurb of the book, you know, about like the Cardassians and the Habesians, which again was such a small part of the story. Even the prologue didn't come into play until, you know, the last third of the book or so, you know, and it's just... It's a bummer when, you know, you get through something, you're like, man, this could have been so good. Like, it doesn't feel like, and I'm not an author, I'm not an editor, but it just feels like it wouldn't have taken much to get that story that we would have wanted.
The one thing that makes me think I would be willing to read more books by this author is that I believe this was her first novel. So sometimes your first novel's not as strong. So she's written her own stuff original, but then I think she did a few other franchise work for other franchises. And I think I want to say she did some of the SCE books for Star Trek as well. Some of the novellas.
Yeah. I think she's done some novellas for that. And then she was in some short story anthologies, like the Strange New Worlds ones.
I'd be willing to read.
I know she's had some of her own originals.
Yeah, I'd be willing to read another novel from her, especially when that happened, you know, later. I'm just, and it's sad because, you know, neither of us likes being negative on a book. We want to enjoy the books that we're reading, and we want to talk about what we like, but we have to call a spade a spade.
Yeah. You know, I'll say too, I was looking at the author's kind of about the author's type stuff or whatever, and she is a child psychologist, which I think makes sense then why
her Tyven works psychiatrist so well.
Stuff, or she's a child psychiatrist. Why Tyven works so well, why Jace and Calderon's relationship works well is like she just knows that stuff. And I believe that most of her other original fiction that she wrote after this, I believe they're all like YA books, so that might even be kind of more her ilk than doing something like this. I don't know, but I mean, yeah, I've never written, you know, a novel before, so I'm not gonna cut her down saying that she's a terrible writer, because like I said, I enjoyed a lot of the scenes and stuff. Just the tying everything together was just the bummer that, you know, we didn't get all that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and I have written a novel, but no one's gonna see that thing. Mine would be worse than this, so she got that going for her.
All right, well, as we're kind of wrapping up here, do you have any final thoughts, and you know, what's your final rating for this book?
I really wanted other things. I it feels like a paradox. I wanted more and I wanted less. that is how I felt about this book, and I would love to see other books. Like if they announced tomorrow we're getting an Enterprise C novel, which it's not going to happen, but if they did announce that, I'd be like, you know, well, obviously I'd read it, but I'd be like, you know, I'm interested in some of these characters, so that I'm interested in what she set up with them. But I'm going to have to get, if we're doing it on, I assume we're doing it on a 5-star rating out a system, I'd have to give it a 2 out of 5.
Yeah. This is tough because, you know, I almost gave it a 2. I ended up giving it a 3 out of 5 on Goodreads. It's probably for me more of a 2.5, but, I really do hate giving low ratings to books. And maybe that, that's why I gave it a 3. It was just because, like, you know, like I said, the writing was fine for the most part. It was just the overall story. But, you know, I think in the, Section 31 TV movie or whatever it is that we're getting, I think they leaked or they announced or something that Rachel Garrett will be in it. So I'll be curious to see what she's like once we eventually get to see that movie. But
I
know. Yeah, I can't remember. They a couple months ago, I think they, I don't think there was an official announcement. It was just somebody, I think, let it slip or something like that. But yeah, so if it's true, we'll see. And
I don't know if we're going to, if they, that's in, this is in the cards, but I'd love to see a novelization for that movie. Cause I don't know if it's going to be big enough to warrant like a prequel novel. Maybe it is, but, if they're not doing a prequel novel or even if they are, I'd love to see a novelization because we haven't had a novelization in a while.
That's a good point. We haven't. Yeah. Cause
the last one was Into Darkness.
Yeah, I was going to say they didn't do one of Beyond, so that, which is pretty crazy. But yeah, it'd be nice, especially if we could get one of our current authors or even Kirsten Beyer, who's, you know, a lot, you know,
I think involved she might
in
be
these
the,
shows and everything. But
yeah, she might be the right fit for that.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, we got, you know, we got through this book, but we'll put this one to bed. And you know, we didn't even talk about the Well of Souls because the book didn't really talk about the Well of Souls. So we'll leave it. We'll leave it there.
Yep. All right. So we just finished our review, but next episode, I guess, we have, I've been looking forward to this next one for a while because we have someone returning to the publishing line that has been absent for several years and it's been too long. Do you want to announce what it is?
Oh, no, go for it.
Oh, okay. So we have another original series book coming out. We have Lost to Eternity by Greg Cox. Oh, I love his writing. This releases on July 23rd, 2024. And it has a pretty prominent character from The Voyage Home.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I'm very excited because we haven't seen that much with her. So So we have that book coming next, and that'll be our next review. I don't know if we're going. I'm assuming we're going to get Greg Cox to do an interview. I assume that's going to happen. Yeah. But I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. I always love it when we get new books and. Yeah, Greg Cox hasn't been around for a while in the Star Trek arena, at least. I still, you know, I remember reading through his Rise and Fall of Khan, Noonien and Singh books. Yep. Was he the one that did the Q Continuum books?
Yes, he was. He did do that. And he did Captain to Captain, which is the start of the Legacies trilogy that they did for the 50th anniversary. Right. That was an amazing book. Books 2 and 3 were fine. But book one, it was so good. And then
it's funny
he
that
also,
book one is the only one that I read of those so far.
book two is fine. Book three is fine, but book one is stellar. And then he also did The Antares Maelstrom, which is like one of my favorite standalones. It's like a gold in Star Trek.
It's nice. Great. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it'd be super cool to get a new book by Greg Cox. It's been too long. And hopefully we get a chance to talk to him because it's always really fun when we get to talk to the authors. But until then, Jonathan, why don't you let our listeners know where they can find you?
You can find me on YouTube for my YouTube channel, which is a book review channel at Jonathan Cohn. I also do book news for a lot of things, including Star Trek book news. I cover all that there. And then you can also find my Twitter account and my Goodreads account, both at Jonathan Cohn.
Yeah, and you can find me on mostly on Goodreads and then also on Letterboxd and Twitter and Instagram at Knitting Trekkie. And you can also find me on Facebook, and I lurk around the Babel Conference and other Star Trek groups and everything. But yeah, definitely find me there. And yeah, I guess that's about it for me. So yeah, thanks everybody for listening. And until next time, live long.
And read on.
What do you call that, light reading?
To each his own, number one.